of the Newburyport Conservation Commission meeting, July 5th, 2011. And let everybody know that this meeting is being recorded. And the first item on the agenda are the minutes from June 28th, which we don't quite have yet.
No.
That's okay. We'll just take care of that next week. Next item is informal discussion regarding sumac removal at 8 K Street on Plum Island.
12.
That's 12 K Street?
Yeah, the petitioners, if you will, are at 8 K Street. Do you want to explain a little bit of the back end?
Yes.
I printed out black and white version of photographs of the sumac.
Great. My name is Michael Plow, and this is my wife, Maureen. And we have a neighbor who rents his house here around the wall. And I asked Dan not too long ago, would it be possible now that these sumac trees have grown to approximately 15 feet in height to remove them? And I said, the only reason I say that is because right now, Maureen has a perennial garden, and I've got to take a life here of it. And he said, I don't have a problem with it. However, before you touch anything, you have to go to the Conservation Commission and get approval to do anything. And he said, I also want to be there when it's done. Now, his address in his backyard is 12 K Street. And I gave it to him. That was my request.
Okay, so this is all on his property?
Yes.
So, I think he's got a... You can probably write up a request or whatever to do it, but it's his property.
Okay.
You'll have to sign it.
Yeah.
Property or approve.
So just get a request from...
Yeah, he'll sign the application form to the commission.
Okay.
You came out on Thursday last week, I did. Thursday, it was kind of a last-minute thing for the agenda, but I suggested that he come in and just was that close for an informal discussion with the commission prior to asking for the permission. This is just something the GIS is showing the area where the sumac is. The photographs illustrate where they are. But
I didn't know if they were indigenous to Plum Island.
They're not.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they're not.
Yeah, some
they are.
Well,
they're not an invasive species.
Right. They're
maybe invasive. They're native. Species.
They are native species. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to verify which species it is out there.
Presumably, it's not poisonous
in
that, so that doesn't mean the black citizens.
Well, I didn't want to do anything.
Sure.
It's not an invasive species, I'm pretty sure it isn't, but I was going to be right there tomorrow.
Sure.
Then I think you need to replace it with something else.
Have there been discussions with the property owner about who's not here this evening?
He's not here this evening, no.
Have there been discussions about screening or things that I probably would want in the world of the sumac?
Sure. I can get in touch with him at some point. Again, did you say we can fill out that application?
Yeah. But I can get that to you from our office.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll help you with your request.
Yeah.
And is the plan to cut down all of the sumacs?
Only the sumacs.
Excuse me?
All of the sumacs.
Yeah, but I mean all of them.
Yeah. Their roots have to be approximately an inch or one going under our fence and do I have they want a strong force or
whatever.
But I'm here because I want to do what's correct. We love Plum Island and hopefully we'll do this someday.
And both parties have a lawn on both sides of the sumac area, correct?
I'm sorry.
Both parties have a lawn adjacent to the sumac.
We have a lawn. I don't think Dan does anymore because of the sumac problems,
right? Right, okay.
But that, you wouldn't be able to replace that lawn or extend it or anything
into that area?
Right.
No.
Yeah, I would say...
He does, however, have a small lawn.
Right, but you can't expand it at all. I would think you could be his representative and, you know, fill out the paperwork for him and have him sign it.
Okay.
So, that being the case, then you could be on the next conservation commission agenda to apply for moving that. I don't know what other questions the commission is for.
Yeah, we want to know what you're thinking of replacing it with.
What we're going to replace it with?
Yeah.
So you can sketch out what it is.
Well, yeah.
If we know what kind of habitat they provide.
It's basically bird habitat, from what I understand.
No, we don't need to know that now.
Yeah.
So you want something low growth and not tall.
Yes.
So something like.
And I'll take any suggestions to anybody.
They vary each plum.
We have a list of species, don't we?
We have a list.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to it.
Oop. I can pull that out.
All right.
I can copy that with the application folder.
Thank you.
Thanks. Why don't we preliminary discuss the beaver habitat on
Doe Run,
which I will recuse myself from.
Do you want to just explain a little bit of your concerns?
Sure. My name's Irene Cooper. My property's at 13 Doe Run Drive, and between 13 and 11, there's a beaver dam that started out rather low and is now probably at least 6 feet high. So it's just getting to a more severe stage now because I'm built high, but as every branch swimmer is, the noise comes and the beavers build higher and higher. So I think I lost 15 feet off the side of my yard, and it's probably 6 feet now from the brook. The gentleman on the other side, it's worse. He's built lower. And,
they have a driveway and a garage. Yeah.
So it's almost level now. What's happened is a culvert, so that it's like a bridge on the other side. Now it's all backed up, and that's where the beavers dam, if I mean not the dam, but whatever that, what's it, a den? I don't know what it's called, wherever they live. And it's like a big swamp now. Yeah.
That's underneath the other side of the street.
Yeah, so that the pipe of the culvert, it's normally like one third level now. It's really close to completely.
Is, do you know on whose property the beaver dam lies?
It's on mine and the guy next door.
It's rather than mine.
Does your neighbor have any interest in exploring options?
He definitely does. I think he's already there. Because it's really. I didn't get pictures from him.
Want to see pictures?
That's actually a house across the street, and that's underneath that, there's a complete, like all around that house, it's a bit.
This is the house on stilts.
Yeah. That's seven.
So the house was built on stilts because it's.
It's near the west lands. This is floating wood and stuff that's under their deck.
Yeah.
And that's their deck.
And they got an approval a few years ago when my first
That is that's
probably across the street.
Yeah. Actually no, that's their house. And that's another house across the street. So you can see like on the left here is where all the water's kind of gathered, and now it's.
When was the photograph taken?
This is today.
Is it so the water level is as
that's
normal?
No, it never pooled there. That's from my house. You can see there's the dam.
Oh yeah.
I don't think it's my understanding that this is a Fish and Game Department thing. It's against the law to do anything illegal. Yeah. I mean, we can't.
The some of your abutters have talked to the Board of Health agent, Bob Bracey, about the matter. I guess my understanding is they haven't yet issued anything in declaring a public health concern per se. That doesn't mean that they won't, but it hasn't been done as an action yet. On the plan, this is not a great black and white, but this is Bill Run Drive right here, so this is their property. So the Beaver Dam is right in here, and the lodge is right up in here. And this is the flooding area that you saw in one of those photographs going in the lawn. That's here.
So the dam is on one side of the road?
Yeah, there's a culvert that goes underneath. And they're damming it up over here, but then they're actually living further back.
They dammed it up on the downhill side? That's kind of odd for Beavers.
I'm not really sure what their
objective is. They did something like that on the some of the old I-95. There's a dam on one side of the road, and actually a couple of them, and the lodge is on the other side of the road.
I think this is the only one in this location. There may be something further down that I'm not aware of.
No, there's not.
Yeah, there is, because the city in here told me there was one further down.
Well, yeah, this way down. There's one down here.
We're not connected to this one.
Not.
They said on Hale Street.
Yes, it's
okay.
It's by the old I-95.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, they got a good one going there.
Yes, they do.
So the water doesn't look bad because of the hiking yesterday.
Has this come up before something in the asset that you can recall? Ball?
Yeah. I remember there was one flooding years ago. I forget where it was. But yeah, it was a long. They filed with us a notice of intent. I think they finally gave them some relief.
Did you notice it on the location program or something?
I believe it was an artificial type culvert through the dam.
The Beaver Receiver?
To get the flooding down.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's...
Is that effective, do you know?
I think they are.
How you do it, you need some real experts in, to know neighbors, know how they would react to be given solutions.
But just in terms of the order of march here, it makes sense, I would think, for you to get what permissions you need from Fish and Wildlife, and then file with us, because otherwise we'd be shooting in the dark as to what. We're not going to know what they allow until they allow it.
What do I do?
I've been out there already. This is the second time I've been out there just to take a look at the comparison of what was there a couple months ago, weeks ago at least. Bob Bracey, the health director, has been out there as well. This is the last time we went out there with me. I've been out there with him. You'd want to do a walk with him from a basic look from a health perspective. They can issue a 10-day permit to do some work there if they deem it to be a public health issue.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not the case, then you can go to the Mass Department of Public Health. You can also go to Fish and Wildlife. To sort of override that, essentially, it's sort of a multiple-step kind of thing. I wish it wasn't so sort of an agency involved, but that's just the way it works.
Yeah.
So your first step is to talk to the health agent. We're already in good conversation with each other, so we'll do a visit together if necessary. But they would have to declare public health and safety issue. I imagine that your neighbor would be the first one to have that issue because they have the garage that's underwater to get into. that if the Board of Health determines that there's a public safety or public health problem, does that obviate the need to even go to Fish and Wildlife?
It does obviate that need if they follow requirements of the Board of Health and of the Conservation Commission. So there's an assumption in there that both boards will, or their agents will agree on the method of, you know, removal and so forth. They wouldn't need to go that extra step up, but if they can't get the approval locally, then they do need to go to the state.
So Ken, it sounds like then that if Board of Health decides that it is a public health issue, then they would file a notice of intent.
To remove.
Yeah,
to
remove. For the work.
If there's an emergency involved, then an emergency essentially. But again, that assumes that the Board of Health agent or whatever itself is declared to be some sort of emergency or public health agent.
So if it was declared like a health hazard, then they let us break it?
If they declare that to be the case, then they most likely issue a 10-day permit for the work to be done. If it's not done within 10 days, you can ask for an extension. From there, you can sort of step-by-step the work.
Okay.
Bob Bracey, the health director, he can answer questions from their perspective. You know,
right.
What they would deem, you know, a concern. I think there was probably more water there last time I was there than there was today. Whatever.
Really?
I forget, it was weeks ago, maybe several months ago,
because I don't think I've ever seen it this high.
Okay. And again, I was judging, maybe on your side there was more water today.
Yeah.
The other side, maybe the streeters, maybe I speak to more, but probably was more water on your side today. But the across the street seemed to be a little bit less than it was last time. Maybe. But I have seen some photographs provided by some residents historically how it actually is. The service and go
around.
Ian, could you check with Fish and Wildlife about that? I know over in Newbury recently they've had issues with roads where the beavers have actually, the water has undermined the roads, and it's taken them a long, long time to get to the solution on this.
Mm-hmm. Middle road,
yeah.
The dam is still there, too.
Yeah, I haven't called them yet. It would be the next step for me. So.
They may have the supreme authority.
Yeah. Well, they do. Their regulations do. That's the process that they've established. You know, I think their assumption is if it's not a local emergency public health safety issue, it goes to them. That's basically what it's set up. There has to be a legitimate public health and safety issue. And so, you know, the property edges are being flooded. It may not be considered a public health issue. If it's going into the house, maybe a different story. But again, I defer to the health director.
What if I had the water tested too, just if it's in the water?
Water quality percent? Yeah, you're going to have to defer to them as to what they consider to be a health issue, whether it's, you know, I don't know if it'll be mosquitoes or, you know, other things in the water, I don't know.
So what would our role be? Something to say, yay?
Any concerns about the process, the way the work would be done, assuming that they did issue a permit? If they didn't, then you're not involved. They have to go to the state. Again, declared some sort of emergency public health issue before it can be removed. You're protected, you know, to the extent they're in the public health or safety issue. They can't do anything unless they're in the room. That's how I read the email.
Not much we can do for you.
Okay. No, I appreciate it. I know the regulations, you know, of course, and this is helpful.
I'm happy to come out there with Bob Brace or whoever. If there's someone else, if they ask to go beyond that for any reason, whoever is mistaken, I'm going to
get in touch.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. A couple other things that I had in all business. Since we're in the new fiscal year and we always ran it, come on. Since we are in the new fiscal year and there is no funding for a separate administrator, according to the ACO, the Plum Island ACO, a written waiver is required to not have a specific 20-hour conversation with us. Yeah.
Correct. I had a discussion with the DP about that because I was concerned the regional office, which is where all the inquiries are supposed to go. They indicated again that they thought that it was a, essentially a condition that was irrelevant at this point, but as far as whether or not they would come down to enforce it or not. But again, I recommended to the mayor at the time that if that was the desire, that there should be a request formally sent to the DP asking them to modify the ACO rather than, doing it without a formal action per se, an agreement between the two parties, since there is a sort of a legal agreement between the two parties.
Well, it's not irrelevant because the administrator is required to handle the ordinance. There's no time limit put on it.
Correct.
Specifically.
Oh yeah, I'm not speaking for the DP. I'm just saying what I was told, that the condition is essentially obsolete and irrelevant at this point, given the passage of time, the adoption of the ordinance, and the commission being well established and the enforcement of the issue. I'm not speaking for the DP, or the action as far as the budget is concerned.
Well, the ACO specifically says any changes have to be in writing.
Agreed.
So we need something in writing. Or the city's in violation of the ACL. The other issue was someone brought it up about the, Paul brought it up about a response from Natural Heritage regarding the walkover and building in the, with the clubbers.
Yeah.
So you said you didn't get
a response. I didn't get a response back. I know that Tim got a response on the somewhat related issue of the, Corvette, which, as you know, the community was held up because of the outstanding application permit on his side. But again, I haven't received a response back yet, so I don't know.
Did you send an email?
I phone called three different names at DP. So you're going to be a fast way. I was out on Friday.
And also we need to schedule a ordinance meeting so we can get going with that.
Right.
Folks want to go over the calendar right now?
It's Thursday's tend to be final day.
Thursday evening, 6:30, 6.
That's kind of interesting.
It'll need to be posted, so.
Yeah, let's do what we do. We're going to do Thursday. I'll do Thursday.
That one I can't do. I lied about Thursdays. No, actually, I can probably do it. No, we'll do it and I'll switch my appointment.
How about the 6 o'clock one? Or is that too early or 6:30?
6 o'clock? Too early for me.
Too early? 6:30?
6:30?
Okay.
So is that this Thursday or a week from now? What's the date?
That would be the 14th.
14th,
so that's a week. And I'll try to reserve the mayor's conference room upstairs for that.
Okay.
I don't believe there's anything in there.
That was 6:30, right?
6:30.
In that case, then we are on to certificate of compliance for Channel and Page DeFantis, 21 LaValle Lane.
Okay. first step for compliance. Looks to me like they've done the work that they were required to do. We have the
some stacked wood.
Mm-hmm. Are you looking?
Looking for the last thing.
Looks like a round.
That's a hose.
Oh, no, no, it's a chair. I see what you're talking about there. Yeah, it's, there's like a, it's like 2x4s.
That's over that rock pile.
Yeah, there was some rock.
You can see that the original rock pile in the first thing. Okay.
Motion to issue a certificate of compliance.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed? Okay. Good. Evans. next one?
Yeah.
I didn't see.
They did not ask for entertainment from what I have to say.
Alright. We will skip over and go to Scott Pinter, 1 Lancaster Road, EP file number 051-0870. Notice 710.
A few of you may have been absent from the last meeting. You're going to need a packet for this one.
I don't.
You need one?
No, I have one.
I need one.
You have?
I need one. Yeah, I don't have any.
Okay.
I'm
going to
get a mail.
I have colored plans for each member. Just for your convenience, it's the same plan. I'm sure
it is
the same plan that was submitted, just highlighted, just to kind of give it a little bit more focus.
That's the other text explanation.
So, what we're proposing to do is we're proposing to construct a single family dwelling. The highlighted line, yellow line on your plan, is a 100-foot buffer zone. It'll have an attached garage, a patio in the rear backyard area. We're proposing grading, and there's also a landscape wall near the edge of the hay bales. The hay bales are colored in orange on the plan. And we're proposing the 61.1 bordering vegetated wetland. The wetland is a red maple swamp. I don't know if any of you folks had an opportunity to go out there, but it's fairly well-defined. It's at the bottom of the slope. I don't believe there'll be too much argument in terms of the wetland boundary. There is also a perennial stream located at the rear of the property. It's shown on the USGSS perennial. However, we were able to document the stream dry for 4 days in June. And since we're not under a drought status, and we have the documentation of the stream being dry for 4 days, it would be considered intermittent. I also ran stream stats on the stream because I wanted to get the size of the watershed area, and the watershed is 0.14 square miles. So what the riverfront regulations say is that if you had an intermittent stream and you wanted to consider it perennial, it would need to be 0.5 square miles or larger to be considered perennial. So this is certainly under that threshold anyhow. I provided the documentation and the notice of intent as well as photographs of the stream dry. And as you know, the spring was a fairly wet spring. So that's what we'd like to do on this piece of property.
What's the distance from the edge of the patio to the wetland?
Well, since you're having that, I just wanted to indicate that 2005, when 3 Lancaster Road came up, this wasn't treated as a perennial stream at that time either. And also that a couple of the abutters had called in, and even though the notice has been given as required by the law, the couple of the abutters, I think 3 Lancaster, had asked in particular, had asked about this matter being continued to the next meeting, the 19th, so that they can have an opportunity to comment, given it was a holiday week, difficult week for a lot of people getting in here for these hearings. So.
Well, we're probably going to want to go into a site visit anyway, so.
And to answer your question, the edge of patio to wetland flag 2A is 34 feet.
The lot looks very narrow. Am I correct that some of the abutters have encroached the landscaping as well as the fence?
That's correct. There's 90.09 feet of frontage on Lancaster Road. And this house here has encroached with their wooded fence. And the applicant, my client Scott Kittner, has told me that they spoke with this abutter and made them aware of the encroachment. So as far as I know, this abutter is aware of that. And most of the lot is lawn. You can see the proposed tree line on the plan. It's lawn up to that area. It's easy to find. It's the only lot on in the subdivision that looks like it's vacant.
Down towards those hay bales is looks like some stone marked in there. Is that the existing wall or walls?
No, this is a proposed wall.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
How high will that wall be?
Well, it varies. Let's see. Oh, 2 feet, and then it falls into grade.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little retaining wall to maintain a level.
Right. I mean, most of the lot, if you have an opportunity to go out there, you'll see most of the lot is flat, except for this small backyard area. So just to maintain the flat grade.
Where's the stream in relation to the wetlands? Or is it,
the stream's in a bit. Let me see.
I can point it out in there if you want.
I'm sorry?
I can point it out in there if you want with the
okay.
It goes basically, this wetland area is like this. And it basically would go out this way towards the Merrimack. So actually Water Street is this is down here. So
is this the same stream that flows
past the Perkins?
The Perkins Garden Road.
Correct.
The National Grid is doing their work.
Correct. Yeah, this is the furthest extent of that.
That stream flows all the time.
I know that it does down next to that site because we've been watching that project. During the spring, there's been a lot of flow through it. I don't know if other streams have been out there all the time.
Yeah, there's an awful lot. And how is the National Grid work affecting the flow of that stream?
They're drawing the water down. So they're not that good.
It's a pond.
It could be drawing some of the water. I don't know how far their reach would be, but they do have a long time since they draw the water down and they do the excavation system. And they are finishing that work up.
No, we actually have
to. So they can actually be drawing it down.
At this time, when these pictures were taken, they were drawing the water.
Drawing the water down.
So, that's.
Oh, so you think that's why it was dry?
Where were they? I'm sorry.
Upstream, they've been doing work upstream.
Can you show me on that area?
Downstream. Is it downstream?
Just so that.
It's downstream. Okay.
So I was showing this gentleman over here that this is the lot. This is Lancaster Road. And this is a ponded area. And the stream flows like that. So I guess I was just curious as to where they were.
The lot, yeah, so the lot's right here.
Yeah.
This, that plane is sort of upside down from this one.
Mm-hmm.
The water essentially would go in this direction through this swampy area here.
And that's where they're doing the work.
They're doing the work already, National Grid, and so this abutter here has actually had some complaints about, but that actually been flooding in the property, but some of the concerns were relative to water, groundwater. So the water is flowing through here. There has been a good amount of flow, but they're drawing the water down in this location here.
Oh,
I don't know
okay.
how much that would affect up here. I haven't really looked at this to find out how much, I don't know about comparison to prior years.
So that seems to be downstream from the project. I don't know.
And that area is where the National Grid is.
So this is Lancaster Road here, and this is where we like to construct the house. Upstream was a ponded area.
Is this the only vacant lot left in there?
I believe it is.
It is, yeah.
I believe it is.
Actually, I should say there is one out close to Water Street that has a foundation, but it's not in that cul-de-sac. This is the only one in that cul-de-sac. There's one further out close to Water Street on Main Street that has a foundation but no house in it.
Was that the flat iron stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh.
when I filed the notice of intent with the commission, that's the only data that they had, which was from April, and they didn't have it for May. I can get you the information for May because Mass DEP hasn't declared a drought.
I don't think it's a drought. I'm not questioning that. I was just curious about your information was from April, but your pictures were from June. And
right. The May documentation just hadn't come out yet, so I figured it's a wet spring, and that's what it's showing.
Anything else? For now? Yeah. So.
And the flags, the wetland flags are all in place?
Yes.
So, you know, when you go out there, we'd like to have, like, corners of the house stay.
Okay.
And the edge of the patio.
Okay, so corners of the house.
Looks like the wall is maybe 8 or 10 feet from the patio. I'm not sure. This is raised above grade, like for a few seasons.
Right.
Okay.
It's going to be a concrete patio?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that'll be okay on Monday. If by chance it isn't, I'll let Andy know first thing tomorrow.
Okay.
But I think it should be fine.
So 6:30 then?
Yeah.
Do you know what day that is?
It's the 11th.
Assuming you would like a continuance?
Please.
Motion to continue.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
That's to the 19th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ted had been there. And we'll sell in advance. The Moors have asked for a continuance. Court Associates, four to six Hale Street, DEP file number 0510867.
The other little triangle was 123.
What we've done is Robert and Eric spent a great deal of time with a hand lens and a microscope going through the floor plan of the building. And he looked for any areas where he could consolidate space and make changes that would accomplish a reduction in the button lock impact. And what he was able to do, and I believe this is correct, is there were some areas where utility chases were. And kind of consolidated those up, shrunk them down to the point where it's going to be difficult but not impossible to run utilities through the building, and then was able to bring this edge of the building back. And by doing that, changed the proposed wetland impact in this area from 1,293 square feet to 140 square feet, but now that we throw the wetland line back to where it was, to 263 square feet. That's a significant reduction in impact. As I think Mr. Ford can probably attest, well before this was filed, the city and Port Health had been working on sort of site layouts and revisions, and I believe that the building even started even larger than it is now. They've really got it down to the minimum facility to provide the kind of quality care they want to provide and meet the current, both current state standards as well as Whittier Health standards for care. So what I provided you tonight is our response to the comments, and I'll just go through them fairly quickly. We have basically reduced the impacts by removing the wetland restoration area that would have, according to DEP, triggered the NEPA review and triggered Army Corps review. That's not exactly how the Army Corps saw it, but again, we're not going to go back and forth with DEP on this. We clarified that the stormwater swale, which the city is interested in having us sort of restore and get down so the outlet from that pipe is actually exposed and water can flow. This is 1,017 square feet. The crossing is 490 square feet. And then the area of the building itself is 263, so the grass-paved fire lane can get by. By the way, that 263 square feet is entirely re-canary grass. There might be, you know, 10% water, but it's in that area where the re-canary grass is densest. DEP said the project requires a 401 water quality survey, must go to NEPA for alteration greater than 5,000 square feet of DPW. And as I noted, we've reduced the alteration. It's down below 5,000 square feet, so neither triggers passed. A cross section of the wetland crossing, I believe that is being provided on the revised plan sheet C8. not demonstrated how the BBW impacts can be avoided and minimized, such as reducing the size of the development, etc. And again, this gets back to the sort of fairly careful process that got the building designed to where it is. The fact that in order to keep this facility open, building somewhere else on the site that complies as much as possible with zoning, etc., this is really the only location for that building. And then the size of the building has to do with efficiencies in providing health care with minimum standards from the state as well as minimum standards from Whittier Health, because they pride themselves on providing high-quality care to the folks who live there. And it's important to understand that if you scale this back, there's a real impact on people. What this building right here is full of is a number of elderly residents, both of Newburyport and of other surrounding communities, that for whom this is their home. You know, this is where I actually was walking through it the other day, and you got shelves in the corners of rooms with people's family pictures. It's really their home. And so the more you cram it, the more you're cramming patients. I mean, right now in the old building, you've got rooms with three beds sharing bathrooms. Now, their staff manage it and they're able to deal with that to still provide high level care. You know, the facility doesn't provide the care that people do, but if you have a facility that can actually match the people in that building, the care is going to be outstanding. So, you know, the building itself is really as squeezed in as it can be. The crossing is necessary for access to the rear of the building and for emergency access to the rear of the building. To have, you know, another access somewhere here means that you're pinching all the access in this one narrow area, and I think that the fire chief is not going to sort of allow it. So that's got to be basically one on each side of the building so they can get in emergency vehicles. And then the stormwater area here, this is an area that if it were created today under the Wetland Protection Act would then be exempt from management, etc. But since it was created before the reg change, I think in 2006 or 2007, it basically means that it's a jurisdictional area even though it's a stormwater swale. So our proposal is to basically reconstruct this with a stone swale that makes it easier to clean with wetlands on either side, and we're going to compensate for that 1,107 square feet within the replication area. Provide more detailed information on the eradication of reed canary grass, etc. On all those things, we have opted to remove reed canary grass control from the plan, rather than having that be something that triggers us into a higher level of regulatory review that would just go over the project. There's comments here on the stormwater standards. I'm going to skip through those and have Steve address them in a minute. Okay, there's a question about where the Hale Street stone line swale was shown, C7 and access area right here. And then additional requirements, they had talked about the Army Corps requirements, water quality cert, et cetera, basically by reducing the impact and removing the restoration area, which is really what would have triggered all that, well below those thresholds. And then lastly, there's a couple of things that we talked about at the last hearing and as well as at the site visit. One is an invasives plan and the other is a meadow management plan. Rather than producing those at this point, what we would like to offer up is to ask that those be conditions that we provide you with a meadow management plan. And the basics of that would be limited mowing, either once or twice per year, high blade height, of, you know, like a 6-inch blade height. And basically what we would try to do is preserve this area as meadow and prevent the autumn olive and some of the things like the multi-flora rose from really taking over. The invasives plan, what we'd like to do is control the autumn olive, control the multi-flora rose. I think we'd like to stay away from the reed canary grass because you have two choices to deal with reed canary grass, the way I originally proposed, or spraying. And it covers such a broad area, I really would not want to be dealing with that level of herbicide application. I know there's plenty of my competitors who claim it can be done safely. It's just, you know, it's too much for that system, which is already stressed. And yeah, we could get rid of it, but I just think the chemical they claim is non-persistent, but I wouldn't want to even swear that it's not persistent. The other thing is, what we've done is, in this area next to the wetland replication, we're proposing what we call a buffer restoration and flood storage area. That area is supposed to be 4,700 square feet. Steve can talk to you a little bit more about the depth that would be and how much storage it would provide. And it's likely that that will actually establish wetland, but we didn't want to call it wetland restoration area because what we don't want to have to be doing when it comes to certificate of compliance is justifying whether that area is a wetland or not. What should be important is that we actually create the flood storage. And if it ends up creating extra wetland, so be it. You know, we'll make sure it's seeded with the appropriate seed mix so that it can become wetland in the event the hydrology is there. So that area here is using a significant amount of upland on the site, but what it does do is it does provide I think a little bit of comfort for the neighborhood back in here that's worried about flooding by providing a little bit of flood storage for when, you know, when you've got a large storm in that area, essentially there'd be a narrow berm between here and the swale as water flows down the swale. If it's reaching a point where it's, you know, it's overwhelming the culvert downstream, it's going to flow up and this area will flood. It'll store the flood water, and as flood waters recede, that area will infiltrate over time and dry. So if before Steve comes up, I don't know if you guys have any questions about any of that stuff.
This is the wetland restoration area.
That's the flood.
And this is the flood area right there. It's actually bigger than the wetland restoration area. And the wetland restoration area, I should mention, will also create some amount of flood spill. It's reducing the grade by 6 to 12 inches in
the
area.
The wetland restoration is not happening, right?
Well, I'm sorry, wetland replication, I should call it. Okay. No, we're not doing wetland restoration where we were going to basically take the existing fairly poor quality wetland and try to enhance it by providing, you know, some diversity of plant species and some richer organic soils. But what we are going to be doing is mitigating it approximately 2-1 for the impacts that are proposed on the site. Right, and that includes the impacts to a stormwater swale. So we're getting rid of reed canary grass over here, stormwater swale, probably the most significant impact, you know, in terms of environmental is 490 square feet where it's mostly cattail, so this is native, you know, vegetation there, but that native vegetation is thriving because the sediment is backed up and clogged up the area. So we're talking about a total of 790 square feet, and then we're talking about 3500 square feet of wetland replication, so that's actually a little better than 2-1. And on top of that, 4,900 square feet of flood sewer there. Well beyond any regulatory standards.
There is nothing to remove. The roof is picked up and routed to this detention area here. With the stormwater, the standard 3 of the regulations requires a recharge for the site. And we actually not only meeting this, we do meet the standard for recharge, not only for this site, but for even the upgraded impervious areas. If you take the entire impervious area of the C&D soils, the prescribed volume of recharge is held in this detention area. So we actually comply, we go beyond what's required for the redevelopment section for standard 3. As far as the suspended soils for the remainder of the site, depending on how it's interpreted, we have the small check dams here and then into the bioretention area. Those systems will be anywhere between 60 and 80%, somewhere in that range. This system here, I've given the freestone filter strip, grass strip in the grass lined area, we're probably around 65 to 75%. So we're achieving in the redevelopment area, we've really gone a good distance here, providing great, better, much, much improved treatment where currently there's nothing at all. So that's the overall picture for the suspended solids and the recharge. I think what I'll do is I'll get into some of her comments regarding bioretention areas not designed in accordance with Mass Stormwater Handbook. The handbook requires 16 inches of soil media for full treatment of nitrogen in suspended solids. This really is, we're not nitrogen, this isn't a nitrogen sensitive area, we're just looking at the suspended solids. 12 inches industry standard has been acceptable. We need to go 12 inches because of the fact in a lot of these detention areas here, the groundwater is quite shallow. So we need to keep these systems, you have to hollow out and dig out to prepare the retention areas. And we like to keep our collection pipe at the bottom above the groundwater. So we are providing 12 inches of media for that. The test pits, she had said there was no test pit performed here. We did actually, there was a test pit performed, test pit T7. The sand's found at that test pit. The groundwater is found 36 inches below grade. The bottom of our pit is just about 12 inches, so it maintained the 24-inch separation, which is required in the Mass DEP. She was wondering how the stormwater was going to run off the curbing. What we're doing is provide a break in the curb, and we have a little paved spillway that bends over and then into a stone lined channel to prevent the pavement from eroding. And actually, this shows how the system works. The water flows in. We have a small floor bay in each bioretention area. It flows through a P-stone filter. This will be basically a flagstone wall. So it'll look like there'll just be a small wall. Aesthetically, it won't look too bad as some stormwater features look. It flows through there to pick up the heavy sediment, and then it ponds in the bioretention area. One thing that I did do after reviewing the Christensen Sergey report is I was looking at it and attempting, okay, what can I do to try and improve our reduction off-site? And by coring a few holes in our standpipe, in some of the stormwater areas, what it does, it allows a low flow situation for the smaller storms to help what happened like a 2-year event, water fill up and then pour in. And what this does for the smaller storm, it comes up to this point and pours in more slowly. So we've actually reduced, I think, the 2-year event by up to 26% now, or 24%. Even with all the changes, the 4 pages of comments addressing them, we're still providing a significant reduction off-site. We're at between, I think, 18% for the 100-year storm and 24% and 25% for the 2-year storm. So we are providing significant reductions here off-site to help, we'll fix it, but just we'll help alleviate or do our part to try and improve the downstream situation. So at this point, 100-year event, it flows up, pours into the standpipe, and then after the event, it drains through and is picked up in this perforated pipe and then out and discharged through the system.
Those percentages you were just referring to, those are reduction in
peak, reduction in peak rate off site.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I think there's that hit the buyer the check dams, the 2 foot separation, stone monitoring with the curving. C3 shows 2 basins, basin H. There was one was misnumbered. That basin, one of those small basins, was mislabeled on the plan. It's been changed. I believe it should have been called basin F. It was just a typo. As far as no details relative to discharge outlets, as far as the outlets, the major outlets, they discharge to this stone. This is a section of, I think we went over this at the last hearing, is the channel. But actually, the existing swale along Hale Street, right now there's a stone wall or a concrete wall, and the channel is up against the edge of the wall here, and it's substantially filled with sediment. I think we all saw that the pipe is probably 3/4 of the weight of the front of the pipe, or 2/3 of the weight of the front of the pipe. What we're going to do is we're going to excavate out, we're going to remove the wall at that location, come down the tapered slope and up with the tapered slope with a 4 foot wide stone line, armored channel here. What that will do, it'll allow the stone, during high flow, it'll reduce any scouring or eliminate any scouring. And also between, or for maintenance, any sediment that fills up in this area can be easily cleaned and easily maintained. I think that's a big problem over there in the industrial park, these swales continually filling with sediment. You've got to go in and muck them out. And with us taking the wetland, this becoming a stormwater feature, it can readily be, can easily be maintained without having to come back. And we've replicated it off, and we've done our good deed and replicated it somewhere else. So as far as the outlets, it's armored here, and then the swale up in the upper area here. This is just a grass area. It's going to be maintained as a grass area. The flows are small or much less. It'll just be vegetated as it is today. Actually, today, I think the pipe underneath the driveway today is a 6-inch PVC pipe that they dug down. I don't know how that worked. It must have been just flowing over the road, maybe it's just today. Really not much. There's never been an issue with erosion up there to date. And it's strictly grass up in that area. I think there was a comment of the swirl particle discharging to this area. Can we move it away? No, we can't move it away. This is collecting the loading dock. It's the loading dock operation. We need to treat it at this location. If we try and there's no opportunity to pipe it all the way back here to the grass area. Our inbrook would be below the existing grade, so it has to be discharged here. And also it discharges to the stone armored channel. And this this drainage area here is very small, so the flows are fairly significant coming through that swirl particle. The comment on the O&M for the grass paver that's been added to the O&M, that would be mowing it. So we require that be mowed and maintained, which Whittier does at their other facilities. And in the winter, it would be cleared of snow. The O&M would specifically says no salt or de-icing chemicals which they don't use at their top scale facility. So I think as far as the DEP comments, I think we've hit everything there and addressed Pam's concerns. And I think, you know, one of the concerns I think we felt was that there was how, you know, does the building need to be so close? We've gone through a lot of iterations to get to this point. And Ron did his best to try and move it away. Actually, the original thought was just to take this building and kick this section of the building this way and kick it here. And he opted against that due to the sensitivity of not moving any portion of the building closer to the abutting property, the residential abutting property. So instead of kicking the building, he ended up reducing the building. So I think what we've done here is done our best to shrink the building, work within the site, improve the drainage, stormwater drainage here. I think it's a great project, and I think we've hit
Yeah, the one question I had, I think I might have brought this up before, but you're taking care of that swale next to the building there, but what happens when all that water comes up against the Phragmites field?
What's going to end up happening is just going to, I think what happens today, I think it's just going to smear us out in that meadow. Actually, look, that's a good, I'll jump into this point here. We are carving this area down. We'll drop the elevation there for at about a foot to a foot and a half, 12 to 16 inches. And that alone is going to create around 8,000 or 9,000 cubic feet. Actually, at 16 inches, we'll be pushing 10,000 cubic feet of storage. So what happened, it kind of dams up here, it kind of slows the process of the stormwater exiting the site. I believe that it exits to the, it outlets from the site underneath Hale Street and then off to the deck corner of the site. We aren't proposing any additional maintenance of that swale. It doesn't impact this property. I don't know, Jeff, you don't have any issues with the parking lot becoming inundated with water. So if it does slow stormwater runoff, it can be handled with the storage here in the field, or even back up, even if it ends up backing up into our system, we end up becoming a big detention pond for what happens downstream. I think we just don't want to get into the maintenance of that swale at this point. We'd like to, you know, I guess in the future, I think we could come back and look at it, but we'd like to just concentrate on this project right now and make the improvements we can.
Well, I guess how much is it going to, if it does start backing up there, it's just going to go out through the entrances, isn't it?
I don't believe it ever overtops. Where the elevation at the entrance is up around 24.6. And I think to date, I don't believe the water has overtopped and run down the street. Maybe you might know if that's...
I remember that.
You know, we are up at a fairly high elevation there. You know, we're down at elevation, we're around 23. I think right up against the wall, we're at about elevation 23. We're hogging down to about elevation 23 here. Or actually, it's 22.5, I believe, up against the wall. It's fairly flat in that area.
If I can add to that, the other issue is extending it to soil work further down as we start increasing the alteration number. Given DEP's reaction to, you know, what we would consider restoration, and I think folks who are familiar with that area would consider restoration. You know, right now they're not seeing it that way, so I think we'd be hesitant to wrap that into this building. Mm-hmm. Looking down the road with the city to address that, I'm sure they would be receptive to working with the city on you know, other things to do. But as Steve mentioned, we reduce the peak rate flows by 20%, something like that.
So 18 and 25,
so roughly, you know, a 20% area. So you're reducing the peak flow that's leaving the site, and then we're providing some extra storage. So I think the net of this project is clearly one that's beneficial for this, you know, doing something towards alleviating some of the neighborhood flooding. But when you look at the volumes involved in flooding that area, you know, if you manage every drop of rain on the site, it's not going to stop flooding in the neighborhood.
No.
But if everybody doing a project of this nature were to manage stormwater, you'd have that. In fact, one of the things we didn't mount up, but one of the things Steve submitted for in response to the engineering was the current proposed watersheds. I mean, I'll give you a technical account. Do I have to? This is the proposed watersheds.
for managing stormwater on the site. The I remember pretty clearly. Basically, the existing watershed was basically taking neighborhood water and site water. They're basically two different watersheds.
The existing watershed is simply the perimeter of this.
Okay.
The outside perimeter is existing. It's one watershed.
And it's all going like that.
Right.
So basically, right now, you've got all this site water leaving the site pretty much unmanaged, going right into the wetland system, right with the rainfall. I mean, I'm sure during that big storm yesterday, it wasn't long before every drop of water was hit that property was in the wetland. Mm-hmm. Now it's all going to be managed by these different, you know, different areas, different structures, etc., that are going to just break it all up. And so not only is it all being treated, but it's also breaking it up so that it's leaving the site more slowly. I wish I had that one.
Just getting back to the recharge standard 3, we're actually providing recharge for even the impervious area off-site. So to tally up all the impervious area off-site and the proposed on-site, we meet the recharge with the volume and that infiltration.
Is that recharge you're making on overflow?
Yes, it does. Oh, yeah.
Where does it go?
Okay, let's go to that. That's the only item that Dan, actually Chris and Sergey, to the review, we may have to tweak a bit. What happens is you have a twin barrel outlet, two 12-inch jam pipes. It's similar, basically similar to this detail, but there's two coming out of the soil. So you have two with a 90 elbow and a 24-inch pipe that carries out. Now, originally we just had some wire mesh on that to reduce, so we didn't impact the capacity of it. And CNS thought that wouldn't be substantial enough, so they would prefer that we provide a grate. In providing a grate, what's going to happen is you provide all these slotted entrances, which will reduce it. That becomes governing on the 12-inch open orifice. So what we're probably going to have to do to this is provide a larger, like an 18-by-18-inch square grate on the top. So the limiting factor of the slots in that grate won't diminish your capacity. So that's the only thing that remains to be sized here is the size of that grate on top of the outlet. So when you look in this infiltration area, there's still be two small standpipes or two 12-inch standpipes with a grate. And what happens is the water flow up smaller storms, it just a very small storm will just flow in, won't even enter the pipes. And then what happens is those are set at elevation 27.3. So the base of the infiltration area is 26. So at 1.3 feet of depth, the water will start flowing into that grate. And then on a 100-year event, it gets to an elevation of 29.01. So you have about 1.7 feet. Your grate is about 1.7 feet underwater, with water pouring into it during the large storm events. At elevation 29.01, it basically comes up and just kisses the edge of the emergency egress.
And where does the overflow go?
Oh, the overflow from that runs to a manhole situated here, which picks up the overflow. Pretty much all of these are detailed the same. There's standpipes that pick up. The overflow standpipe from basin H joins that manhole 24-inch pipe to basically the end of that stone line channel, and then we have the stone line channel running off.
So, Steve, is that the reason why it drops from 25 to 18? When you go up to the 100-year storm, the flow rate?
25 to 18.
Or whatever you...
Oh, the reduction?
Right.
Well, it's throughout the whole site. Each of these areas do their job in trying to reduce the peak rates. These we don't. You will get some infiltration in these basins. We're not taking credit for the fact that it's clay, and we don't have our 2-foot separation. We're not allowed to take credit. So, the system as designed will perform better than the rate than the model allows us to report, just for the fact that you don't.
you are not allowed to take credit for any exfiltration. Any water that goes into these basins, we have to, it's collected in the perforated pipe underneath and piped up. It's slowed down substantially because it perks through the soil media. We will get some additional reductions there.
Steve, are those 100-year storms, are those Cornell numbers?
Yeah, that is Cornell. Yes, it is. 8.5 inches, I believe. Yeah, 8.5 inches versus 6.9
versus 6.8
inches.
Have we seen an operations in the maintenance manual?
There is one. Oh, there's an O&M, I think, was attached to the original submittal drainage report. There was an O&M provided.
Does it need to be modified?
For Chris's considering these comments, there are a couple modifications that are going to be required. I have called up that the catch basins be inspected twice a year. I guess DEP requires four times a year. And the sediment be removed when it's halfway to the invert, so it could be removed sediment. Also, they said that we need to provide the O&M for the Vortec unit per the manufacturer's recommendations. That I included that with the CV. CVs, it's now four times annually, and the Vortec is included at four times annually, and remove the sediment at when it achieves 3 feet depth. I'm saying inspect it four times a year, not twice. Actually, Vortec says twice a year. We're saying four, so it's better. And then remove the sediment at half the depth, which is 2 feet versus 3 feet. So it's a higher standard than what's required by the manufacturer. And also, he mentioned about providing some additional maintenance language for the fire retention areas, which we have done. We're addressing it's a monthly inspection of those areas where any vegetation or poison soils are repaired, trash and debris removed. Also, a key item is if there's ponding evident at 48 hours after a storm event, that media is required to be replaced due to clogging. So it's a 48-hour threshold to put on that.
Was that attached?
There was an email that I sent. Andy earlier today that has that included, the updated O&M, I believe.
And the old O&M is probably not in your packet because the standard practice when we deliver applications is two or three copies of the stormwater report. It's an awful lot of paper. Most commissioners don't really look through that. But we'd be happy to provide extra copies of that if you want. So basically, we usually give, I think, two for the office and one for them to share with the planning board. And if you want, we can keep that going.
Yeah, electronic is good, too.
I guess if there's any additional stormwater questions, I'll take them.
Anything else?
What about snow storage?
On my site layout plan, I guess part of the planning board submission, I don't have that copy with me now. I think it might have been included with the layout plan, might have been included with the submission here. I think with a plan of record, I think what we should do here is the planning board packet, and granted there's additional drawings that you probably don't, there's some architecturals and such that you typically aren't included, but I think we should just include one package that's typical for CONCOM and the planning board. But as for in the layout plan, there's no storage of snow allowed in these retention areas. It's to push it up. Push it here, push it back this way, push it back this way. Of course, our major snow storage areas are all along the back area here, and push it off to the edge here. parking lot here. Actually, they're going to have to push it all the way through. There may have to be some loading operations and trucked over in this area. Grass paved, I believe they would know how they achieve that is snow blow. So that's just going to be snow blowed to the perimeter out. It'll be snow blowed into the wetland, but it's clean. There'll be no salt.
It keeps somebody busy for a while.
Yeah, I guess they, I don't know how long it takes to do topsoil, but they do it. They did it, they kept it clear this year.
And it's, I think that's similar length over there. So,
yeah,
like,
who's? Anything else? Anything from Paula?
Ma'am. Mm-hmm. Okay. 70 Welch, Philippine, 17 Fulton Drive. We are again this evening to just oppose the project. Although I appreciate Mr. Sawyer and Mr. Cheese's comment that they're sensitive to the crowding of neighbors, I would argue that you had no place but the back of the building to move in brick because the building is so tight against the existing property. So I think it's a little disingenuous to present it like that because that's not the case. You cannot move that building any closer. It is as close as it humanly can be. So I do need to say that. Also, the slopes that you had previously talked about, and we didn't really address this last time, and I know you are landscape architects, not here, but I'm curious how you can plant 15-foot trees on this slope.
Oh, okay, actually,
could you address that?
Sure.
Okay. Actually, thank you for bringing that up.
Because although I appreciate the wetlands...
Yeah. One change between the grading plan, I completely forgot about that. Between the grading plan of the last submission, we had a comment regarding this wall height being above 4 feet. We have adjusted the wall height here to 4 feet. We did this by coming away from the building at 2%, and then if you notice, there's a break line here. Then we come back. We start trying to come up with a grade. The fire apparatus, it's only 5%. There's no problem with the 5% cross slope here. So we managed to raise the base of the wall here. And the other thing we did was we were grading right up to the property line here. And I think it's been noted that there is a fair amount of encroachment there. And what we've done is we extended the stone wall here so we can catch the grade earlier away from the property line. So what we have here is we have this small wall here. At the highest is 4 feet high. And the slope at the top of this wall is only 3-1 at the maximum, which is easy, simple to plant. We actually got a critical section there. Here's our property line. Here's section AA at this location. One of the tightest areas as we come around the back corner. Dotted line here is our existing grade. One thing that we've done, we've tried to push the building down as low as we can. We are cutting about 6.5-7 feet at this location. We have a floor elevation of 30, and the existing grade is 35.5, so it's a 5.5-foot cut. Now, if you notice, we come down away from the building, so we have sheet flow away. You're required to have a 6-inch reveal at the floor slab. You come away at 2%, then we come back up at 5% to the toe of the wall, 4-foot wall, and then this subtle 3-1 slope when we tie in. So we have this entire area here. It's about 20, at this point, we have about 20. That's station 60, that's station 80. So we have about 17 feet for planting between the top of the wall and the property line.
Another thing just to point out is that it is outside the 100-foot buffer. It's all the planting area and the wall.
And then I know that the proposal is to eliminate Is that correct?
Yeah, let me see if I can.
But by eliminating that, and just as you're doing that, that is a natural barrier for water and runoff. If you clear cut that, because in essence, that's what you're.
Well, not really.
You're not clear cutting.
No. I mean, it's not really doing much for stormwater. The area that I'm talking about with respect to the Conservation Commission and invasive management is really this grove in here, which is currently autumn olive, and I think you probably know there's a pond that was actually relatively healthy several years ago and is dying at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And the autumn olive pumps an awful lot of nitrogen into the soil and actually over-nitrogenates plants and kills them.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is actually the natural ability of that area to store and uptake water is going from a diverse bunch of species into one particular species, and that's autumn olive. If left unchecked, it will take over everything, with the exception of what's happening more along your property line and up in here, which is multiflora rose, which is a vine that is actually killing off the trees over there as well.
In deference to your expertise, some of our neighbors who have been there since 1975 say they look the same today as they did 40 years ago.
Multiflora rose is well known to essentially treat other plants as arbors.
Mm-hmm.
And about the only thing that in nature that gets rid of it is oriental bittersweet, which treats it as an arbor. And it will basically eventually kill off anything it grows under. It will look lush and green the way it does.
For 40 years.
I can assure you it was not multiflora rose 4 years ago. It may look relatively similar because what happens is green replaces green. But eventually it will kill off the trees. The trees will fall, and then the multiflora rose will be sitting on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that happens is the multiflora rose creates a fruit. It's eaten by birds, and it's spread everywhere. So it's doing environmental harm beyond this piece of property. In addition, most of that area, I believe, is part of the landscape plan.
No.
Which is something, again, this is out of the 100-foot buffer.
So is that more appropriate for the planning board meeting?
Yeah. I mean, what's going on with the plants and stuff outside the 100-foot buffer?
I'm not here to waste
right.
anyone's time.
But what I'm
more appropriate there than
what I'm talking about doing for invasive species management with respect to the Conservation Commission is controlling the autumn olive in this area, and the autumn olive and multiflora rose that is up in this area, and trying to control that through a meadow management program that will essentially maintain this area as meadow, which will enhance the diversity of the species of plant in there, which increases sort of the amount of food available, so it's more beneficial for wildlife. When you combine that with the wetland replication area and the flood storage area, that will both be seeded with native seed mixes and planted with some plugs that will actually provide a fairly diverse area there. It's actually going to increase everything from dealing with stormwater, et cetera, to wildlife value and try to keep the invasives at bay.
So the one tree that is up there that's healthy. Yeah.
If it's a native tree, basically what would happen in an invasive species and meadow management plan that
mm-hmm.
we're asking if the commission wants those, if they add those as conditions, and we'll provide those later. But
you'll be removing that live tree.
If the building is going to be sited there. Well, if the building is going to be sited where there's a tree, yes, the tree will go. If you're talking about that evergreen tree, it's not going to be there much longer anyway. It's dying.
Mm-hmm.
It's being killed by the autumn olive. What we're looking at doing is, if you tag the native trees that are out in that meadow area, they would not be cut. Everything else everything else in this area, beyond the edge of development,
mm-hmm.
in the upland areas, and in the areas of heavy invasive species sort of growth, will be cut once or twice per year, except one caveat is in order to control Phragmites, we propose cutting that at the end of August
and then any time it reached 3 feet after that, for 7 years to diminish its strength to get it down sort of into the background. But other than that, everything else would be cut twice per year, 6 inches height, so you maintain the meadow diversity and prevent autumn olive from creeping back into the area. And basically what you're doing is giving native plants a chance to compete. So, you know, it really is something that if you don't control invasives on this site, autumn olive and multiflora growers are easily transportable by birds. Essentially, this becomes a seed stock for the entire area.
Okay, just one final question. New reports for the Conservation Commission, who's going to supervise this? Who will, other communities have a person, an agent. We do not. So, who's in charge?
Well, at this point, Andy Port is acting as our administrator, and
it's an enormous responsibility, though.
I would urge you to talk to the mayor.
Mm-hmm. I mean, no offense to you, Andy Port,
right.
But this is forever. This. And I certainly would, I wouldn't want that on my shoulders.
Okay.
Actually, Chair, what happens with the planning board process? There is an escrow account that is set aside for the city's peer review engineer, and they do perform site visits to confirm that the plans are built, that the project is built for plan. So there is a stopgap there with a technical person separate from the project who works on behalf of the mayor, behalf of the city.
But not a Conservation Commission agent?
No, but they're aware of the plan specifications, they're aware of the order conditions, and what needs to be met. The technical personnel that understand the process.
But man, I will be visiting the site during construction to make sure that things are constructed according to plan, regardless of the planning board's peer consultant. Obviously, there are some things that have to be maintained longer term, manual plowing of the path there around the building, vegetation being maintained, that sort of thing. But as far as during the construction period until after that point, that's something I'll be doing. It's pretty standard that planners and conservation agents can do that. So
my final comment, and then I'm done here, anyways, this evening. I can't help but feel that they took an existing structure that on the topography they continually refer to the Topsfield building. The Topsfield building, you can go to the Topsfield site because I've visited it. And I understand that Topsfield building on that site. They took that building and they have plunked it, much like the Wicked Witch of the West, if you will, onto this. And they didn't honor the topography of this land. I can't even wrap my brain around it. And although I realize they continually press that emotional button about the residents in Port Rehab, I think they really haven't given much consideration to the building that's there currently. And it's a fiscal decision. At the end of the day, it's a fiscal decision to leave what they have in place and to build something, an enormous structure. Feel that that's in that mars the line of conservation and what are we doing here? That's fiscal.
First one,
sure.
This building footprint is nothing like building the top school. It's 123 bed nursing home, 2 floors high, and the exterior look will be the same, but the plan of this building is nothing like it. The plan of this building was designed for this site. The plan of the Topsfield building is designed for the Topsfield site.
Okay. Good Commissioner, anything else?
Before we decide, are we waiting for final plans?
Yeah, you're before the planning board tomorrow.
Right. What I was hoping to accomplish tonight would be to ask you guys if you could continue this to the next meeting, but at the same time direct the conservation administrator to begin the process of drafting an order of conditions for you guys to consider at the next meeting with the final plans. That would give us the ability, if some wrinkle does come up at the planning board, or if there are minor tweaks that need to be made, to make those, get you guys a full set of plans that you can review, and then if there are any additional issues, grapple with those. In the meantime, I could work with Mr. Ford on language that would accomplish what we want in terms of animal management and in terms of invasive species control. I mean, ultimately, that's a commission's call with specific language. But, you know, we'd like to make sure that we're not going to be held to manage things like this, because I really don't want to go there. But we do want to take an active role in managing invasives. We do want to manage the meadow, because meadow habitat, both upland and wetland, is a disappearing resource in the Northeast, and there'd be an awful lot of environmental benefit to do that. It really is of no gain to the facility, but it's an offer of good faith to do that. Mm-hmm. And I do want to just step back to one thing, and that is, it may seem to the evaluator like this is a fiscal decision to leave that building there, but I can tell you from personal experience that my mother-in-law is going to be moving into this facility. And the reason is because in Newburyport, there's not a place that has the quality of care that this place has. The facility itself doesn't compare to some of the other places, in fact, where my mother-in-law is now. And for them to tear down the building when my mother-in-law has this narrow window to live would be cruel. Her only other option is a facility in Bedford. So, you know, that would be acceptable for our family. So that would be removing her from my wife in the area. And that's an incredibly personal thing that is true for a number of the patients there. So it isn't just about dollars and cents. This is about caring for people. And it's actually personal, very personal. But getting back to the project, I think we've met as much as we can the commission's concerns, as much as we can the DEP concerns. I think we're proposing a project that goes above and beyond the regulatory requirements under the Water Protection Act. Everything from stormwater use of Cornell numbers down to the replication beyond the minimum that's required and the creation of flood storage. I think we're proposing a good project, and we'd like to move towards closing this out and getting
If we're going to go that route, you know, I assume you'll have the final plans next week.
Yeah, I mean, we will have final plans, but we will leave our final plans
right
before the meeting, planning board meeting. But assuming there's a wrinkle, you
can. Right.
Yeah, they may have one. Typically, you go to they should be, well, they're final now. They've been submitted. Chris was sent to Sergey a couple weeks ago, the final plan set. Other than that, I think I mentioned about tweaking that inland structure.
The question is, our next meeting will be on the 19th. Would we be able to get a week ahead of time?
Yes, we would.
And perhaps if Andy is definitely drafted for order of conditions, we get
put that in the packet with the plan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that would be.
Segment of it.
Yeah.
I can break that out.
Yeah, I don't need all those hundreds of pages.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, I can send around the O&M plan as well as the draft decision and the plans that they provide. You can get those to me electronically as well.
Yeah.
Some members like to see that electronically.
And Steve, you'll break out the O&M plan.
Yes.
And we'll name it O&M plan on the file name, so that's where it is.
Yeah, just make sure everything has a revised date.
Up. Motion to continue to the July meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Vote.
Apparently Mark Emmons has me. Showed up.
Is that property affected at all by
Not much. I mean, it's close to it, but I wouldn't say it's affected by it. It's not really getting any flooding or something that I can see. This is either, it's a couple of properties away, so or at least I should say one away. But it's far enough away that I don't think it's getting any impact. Of it's downstream of the dam, so that is the question.
We just continue that one to the next meeting.
Would you like to do that?
No.
That's a little annoying that it didn't show up.
Yeah, I guess we know
why it didn't show up.
Well, I'm in charge. I'm with you.
Let's just continue with this time. If they don't show up the next time, then that's something we'll worry.
I'll call them in the morning and remind them that they don't want to make any progress. Okay. If they didn't call, they didn't email.
So it's not the way to do it.
Yeah. So it's the 19th.
Yeah.
So moved.
So second.
All in favor? Yes.
I think that's about all we have.
If I could have just distributed one thing while folks are here.
Mm-hmm.
Just real quick on 10 Perry Way, as close to the DPS facility. This is just kind of distributed time just now, what it is here. This is a very simple one, in my opinion. I suggested they file an RDA because what they're proposing to do is put a small loading dock in an area that's already paved as a parking area. I asked if they're doing any expansions. And so this is, to be for our next agenda, but what you'll see is on the plan, all of this is existing. Except for the loading dock right here. It's already a paved area. They're going to turn that into a loading dock. I suggest because they weren't doing any additional expansions, etc. It's basically coverage for coverage. In this case, it's actually technically cleaner than the paved area as far as stormwater runoff. So I suggested that they file an RDA for this and make sure that they were providing a water control, and that that'll be one of the conditions. But that would be taken out of one of the future contract meetings. So this is what they gave us. They're going to give it to you now later here.
Have you been over there looking at it?
I took a look at the site, yeah. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I have a photograph I took today. I can email it out if you want. I mean, it's actually on the plan. There's three, I think, doors here, bays, and, if it's concrete, it's going to go over existing, asphalt pavement, so I don't think there's really any impact as long as they keep erosion control during the construction period.
Andy, have you been up to look at 16 Basin Street?
I'm sorry?
Have you been up to look at 16 Basin Street?
I have. I'm not convinced that the... I don't want to get too
too much into it, but the I think that there's some adjustments that can be done to the plan to make it work without the impacts that are associated in sort of a short.
It seems like in what he said was where the new deck is going or the addition to the deck is there's only 30 or 40 beach grass plants there, so that's all we're going to replicate is 30 or 40. In my opinion, he's taken up another 240 square feet of potential beach grass area. He needs to replicate that somewhere.
I don't think
he has the space on the lot to do that.
Well, I mean, the deck is also a large one, it seems. It seems like that and the shed, which are different spots, one of them is sort of pushed on the corner with some of that area. I think it could be downsized or adjusted somehow, maybe the shed relocated, you know, for instance, to make it work without the impact. I don't have a problem per se with them relocating vegetation. I just think it could be done without necessarily impacting that area. So it, you know, might be worth folks, you know, taking a set of take a look.
I'm not sure I have materials on that. When did those materials go out?
About 4 weeks.
What was the one I was at?
Oh, you went, okay, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember whether you were there or not.
Yeah, you might want to relay to Mr. Beasley to, before he comes in 2 weeks, he might want to change the plans.
Okay. this is 16 basis feet, because okay. There's only one plan, one 8.5 by 11, and it shows the plan. It's a deck and a shed.
Andy, will you be sending us packets in the mail with all the paperwork?
Yeah, I'll give you. Did I give you this one? Because you weren't here.
No, I wasn't here at the last.
Okay, so you need this one too.
Yes.
Okay, my apologies. I'll make sure that these things are getting out of the mail.
Joe, can we add an item on the agenda for next time to discuss the using some of our funds to hire someone to help out with the administrator?
Mm-hmm.
Now that the budget's been approved. Thank you.
You sure can. We can also discuss it now if you want.
Do we have it?
Doing old business, I think. It's
not a matter that it needs to be.
Okay. Well, now that the budget's been approved and there's. You know, they did not add in the conservation administrator's position, as they kind of were talking about a little bit. I think we should discuss the option of securing the services of, you know, someone qualified to do some of the administrative work.
Yeah, when it comes to submissions, they're paying a fee anyway, which is basically to get their permits looked at. So on a per permit basis, I don't see why we can't do that.
We talked briefly about it. You brought it up a couple meetings ago, and we decided to shelve that discussion for a little while. And I know, Andy, you made the comment that you thought it would be best to keep it specific to specific tasks, which I think is probably a pretty prudent
idea. I know the mayor's looking into trying to find more funds to fill a position, at least partially. I don't know what that is right now. We haven't seen anything formal on it yet, so I imagine it's still in progress. But my only concern is that if somebody is doing work for a few hours, that I'm not spending more time trying to coordinate with them, you know, the work that they're doing, that I'm actually getting benefit from the work that they're doing.
Sure.
So, for instance, I wouldn't want to have somebody dealing with the aspects of, you know, permits coming in while I'm doing that and having people, you know, talk to one person, say, oh, I spoke to them and I didn't know what happened. I didn't spend more time relaying information back and forth when they're not here.
Yeah.
That's one, not fair to them since they're not actually working during those hours. And two, I mean, you know, we're not always in the office at the same time, per se.
We want to make sure that we increase efficiency, not decrease efficiency.
One thing that comes to mind would be just making sure there are copies of things and things get distributed to people,
right?
But not necessarily interacting with applicants in a way
that would
cause them to trip over each other.
Because we haven't gotten the packets in the mail, so that's the kind of thing that would be a good, a task. Yeah, would you be comfortable coming out with an outline for sort of a job description task that you think would be
well suited
that you could present to us?
It's really more of an administrative assistant than a conservation administrator.
Diane F. has been, we've been adjusting what we're doing in the office to compensate for some of the things that used to be done by one person. So, for instance, when people bring in applications, I've been going the last couple weeks, sort of defining that boundary, sort of, she's going to take in the application, and she's going to make sure the number of copies are there. She's out this week on vacation, so it's been kind of an awkward couple of weeks because a lot of people are taking vacation time, just a lot of bouncing around. It's sort of that summer thing, but distributing the copies, making sure the ad gets drafted, sent to the paper, and so forth, that's something she would handle. That I review the applications themselves, or do the site inspections, write draft decisions, and so forth, so that the administrative things are dealt with, by our administrative assistant, as would typically be done. So that's typically previously Mary would have a much more involved role in that, because once you have office hours, as things are coming in, she might actually be there for it, and two, she could handle those things on her own. But given that we have less staff hours in the office, I've asked Diane to take on that aspect of it, which is not atypical for an administrative assistant. And that way I can focus on the content of the applications rather than drafting an ad, making sure the number of copies are there. That's not something I should be spending my time with. So.
Yeah. The wetlands ordinance, we're getting pretty close at this point. Do you think that's something that we could use more help with, Joe, or what's your opinion on that?
I wouldn't mind it. It's going to take time. I haven't had one ever put before the council, but I know what they went through for the dog ordinance, for the off-leash ordinance, so I spent a lot of time with that, so it is a lot of time, so.
We discussed, trying to do some public outreach, too, as it relates to the new wetlands ordinance. I suppose that would be after the...
there's outreach before, too, to the council, and it's a lot of... There's a lot of time involved.
That might be something that we could... That's something we can help out with, too. It's just, helping us do that.
Maybe schedule things, but you wouldn't want somebody to have to come on and familiarize himself or herself with nuts and bolts that are in that.
maybe advocacy role for that kind of thing, but I would feel more comfortable dealing with the council on those issues than, having another person who...
I don't mean the council. I'm talking about more
scheduling,
and I don't even know what the nature of the public outreach is at this point. That's still yet to be discussed.
The city council, the subcommittee is going to have its own set of meetings on it, which is a good forum for the public. The most typical one for ordinances anyway. So not to say you shouldn't have one. I think you should. It's one of your regular meetings. Even you don't even necessarily have to have a special meeting. You could have it as one of your regular ones. You could get something out. Press thing. Just look. If they want to comment on it, but the city council is going to do that anyway. And my guess is they'll probably have a series of nights because they have been taking a while with some of these ordinance, figuring other matters out. For my opinion, it shouldn't, it doesn't necessarily need to take that long. We can tweak the documents we have right now to address some of the concerns as best we can in advance. I mentioned to Barry Connell, who's the chair of the planning development committee, this is coming along, so that he can prepare for that and save the committee for a while. I did actually have a conversation with Tom Williams about the ordinance of the day, and I agreed with it. One of my previous comments was that I think it's, if at all possible, it's better if we consolidate that one document, one set of regs, ordinance as opposed to ordinance and regs. I understand that other communities have had those things, and one thing that you pointed out that I would agree with is that it does make sense to have the performance standards and things like that in the regs. I can see having that as a separate per se. I just don't want to have duplication of similar sections in both documents. I think it's you can easily print out the ordinance that could be whole and have the regulations cover a matter that's not covering great detail in the ordinance.
I think that's the idea. The regs put flesh on the bones, and broader policy issues are raised in the ordinance and discussed and addressed in the ordinance. But we felt it would be very cumbersome to have to every time we want to tweak a little section or. Yeah. Back to the city council.
being somebody that's dealing with administration regulation all the time, I think there's definitely a benefit to having the framework established for the council, and then after that, have the ability to make adjustments as time goes on. Because the state regulations will change, the stormwater standards will change. If you want to make reference to those, then I have the cost to go back and wait for committees to look at things. Since you're the expert in that, it's not necessarily something the council is an expert in. The one thing I would suggest having in the ordinance is right now in the regs is that 25-foot no disturb area. I don't think that it's going to pass muster to not have it in the ordinance, because it's, if you're really talking about, that's a framework thing to me, the jurisdiction issue, the presumption that an area is no disturb, that's the way it is in PVD, that's the way it's been done in every other community that I've worked with and seen. So I would strongly recommend making that adjustment to it before going to the council. But the rest of it is pretty straightforward to me. I would just recommend minimizing, in our language, minimize the amount that's duplicated in the regs. Just get out there. All it's doing is supplementing what's not covered in the regs and things people don't adjust.
Well, just for one thing, there's a whole procedural dimension to deal with the regs.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
In fact, how many copies of plans,
right.
Extension times, deadlines, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Stuff. Yeah, that's something that has to be in the ordinance, you can say.
And that stuff that you want to have the ability to tweak from time to time.
Yep.
Gee, this isn't working. I'll get this stuff
right
in advance.
Right.
Maybe we should have this electronically instead of hard copies.
Right. Right. Some board members I know in the past have wanted a large set of plans, and all of a sudden they say, no, I don't want the large plans too big, I want one by 17. And then they'll switch back at some point. So that's something you can do the right to without having to go back. That makes perfect sense to me. And again, I think we should try to bring it to a point where when we bring it to the city council, we expect them to move it through with one or two of their own special subcommittee meetings, and then bring it back to the full council with a recommendation that it be adopted. That's the council mandate, if there's some amendment to it. But rather than having it sit there until the end of the year, I think we've got.
Being an election year, are we trying to get this through this year, or do we wait for the council?
Well, then that's another reason. I mean, there's pros and cons of doing it at different times, and if you're going to do it, I would recommend doing it earlier in advance if you can, and that, or expect it to happen, because there's a lot of focus on other things around that time. So I think if we can iron out some of these things for the next meeting we have on the 14th, then tweak those changes, and then presumably you'll want to submit that to Chris Jones as clerk for the council and ask him to bring that forward.
You don't want to waiting for a new council, new politicians, means maybe waiting almost a year. People get in and get focused on it again.
I think we should be submitting it as soon as possible.
Yeah. You'll want to make sure you've got a council sponsor. That's one of the things I want to talk to Mary about, is planning development, chair. You'll maybe be interested in doing something like this.
I'm not worried about a sponsor.
Okay. So I just want to make sure that happens, well in advance. So that's been done, I guess. That's the person, the people who are going to bring it forward as sponsors and push it through.
Yeah, that's
not
okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.